I think everybody knows Tony Staffieri, the CFO of Rogers. Welcome, Tony. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me and us. Good morning, everyone.
Tony, let's get right into it. What's your assessment of the wireless market these days? We're in a, you know, another seasonally busy period, back to school quarter. What's happening out there in wireless?
You know, I'd say generally it's been a good gradual progression to of increasing growth. You know, we started off, I would say the first half of the year, what we saw is a continual increase in the rate of growth. And as we look to the activity in Q3, particularly around back to school, I would say the growth rates seem, you know, our read on it, flattish to the rate of growth we saw last year, which was a pretty good rate of growth. Maybe slightly down, but a continuation of the progression that we saw throughout the year. So, it's a good backdrop, and I think it really speaks to the fundamentals that have driven growth in the past that continue to be there. First and foremost, the penetration rates in Canada still sitting at, you know, we estimate now 88-89%, but still well below where other countries are at. In the U.S., for example, at, you know, over 120%. Rate of immigration, the backdrop of GDP, all those things that have contributed to subscriber growth continue to be there, and it's sort of lending itself to good growth in the industry. Notwithstanding, you know, what I would call a period in Q3 where we've gone through a change in pricing strategies. We launched the, you know, the unlimited Infinite plans towards the end of the second quarter, and I would say the adoption of our plans in the industry still have vibrations in them in terms of subsidy or no subsidy and all the way through. And so it's a bit of a noisy quarter, but I think as we continue to work our way through that, I think it, you know, all the ingredients are there to look to continued growth in the rest of the third quarter and fourth quarter.
You know, you led the way on the new pricing plans. They were still fairly fresh the last time you guys made public comments right after the second quarter release. And at that time, you said you had more people trading up than down, essentially. What's happened over the intervening 3 months here?
We're really pleased with the success we've seen to date. You know, today we're now approaching almost 750,000 of our subscribers on the new plans. So the rate of migration and acquisition on the new plans has exceeded our expectations. So it's been very good. You know, we had talked about earlier, you know, at the right time we may do things to incent the market to try to migrate, and that's been happening on its own. So we're really pleased with the way that's been going. In terms of upgrader versus downgraders, I think we're getting what you would expect, that even more are upgraders than downgraders. I quoted before, you know, two-thirds of our customers were upgraders, and that's really what we wanted to have happen, was those customers in the $45 to $65 price point would migrate up to $75 entry point on unlimited for the sake of certainty, et cetera. And that's actually even increasing beyond that. So it's still roughly a two-thirds, one-third, so one-third downgrade, two-thirds upgrade, but even more so on the upgrade side. And so what we really like in terms of what we're seeing when you look at the underlying MRC, so put aside overage revenue for a moment, I'll come back to that, but what's the true underlying MRC that we're seeing net of those two aspects? And we continue to see really good MRC growth in the 1 to 2% range. So that's a really good fundamental that we like. And then as we look to the metrics that ultimately get at churn and usage, very good there. If we look at likelihood to recommend on the new plan, including in particular value for money, the metrics are up over 50%. So really good customer acceptance and satisfaction with them. If you're to look at our operating metrics, and in particular the call center, what we see is much fewer calls. So in the past, once customers made a price plan change, it wasn't uncommon for customers to call back and tweak the change to the plan. What we're seeing is those follow-up calls for further changes to the plan are way down, significantly down. What we're finding is calls to the call center in general are way down. The length of time on the call is much shorter, And so that's coming in better than expected. And importantly, what we measure as first call resolution, so getting it right the first time, is way up. So when we look at those types of metrics, we're really pleased with what we see. The faster adoption than we expected, what it does mean is that that overage revenue that we knew was going to go away, that decline is happening faster than we thought. So the total quantum is still the same, but we're moving customers onto Infinite a lot faster, which is a good thing. So previously talked about our anticipation would be that we were through a period of 6 to 8 quarters of migration. Our thinking now is probably in about 4 quarters, and maybe 5 quarters we'll be through this. And so in the very short term, what you'll see is overage revenue decline faster than we thought, but those underlying fundamentals are improving faster than we thought as well. And so if you sort of think, a year out from now, the majority of the Rogers base will be on Infinite plans, which have a starting point at $75. And that compares very favorably to our average ARPU today of, as you know, $55. So all the metrics and indices are indicating very good success with it. The one piece that we're still hoping settles out is really the hardware subsidy piece of it. If you're to look to competitive intensity this quarter, I would say it's on par to last year when it comes to hardware subsidies and promotional things like gift cards. But what we don't have is MSF or recurring revenue discounting through data bonuses and that type of thing. So in that way, the market, I would say, is less competitive on that side of it in terms of connectivity revenue. But we see about the same level of hardware discounting. Strategy when we launched Infinite was to really balance the economics of good value on the connectivity side and balance that with lower hardware subsidies. And I would say we're disappointed that that piece of it hasn't come in as quickly as we expected. A couple of our competitors have really stuck to the subsidy model. And so we're disappointed with that. One of our competitors, so much so that they're giving away a $1,000 phone. And so when you subtract that from the MSF, you're left with ARPUs that we just don't get in terms of lifetime values. And maybe those aren't sustainable and they aren't long-term anyway. So as I said at the outset, we're optimistic that as we work through the busy period and towards the end of the year, that you'll see a migration out of reliance on the subsidy model and more indexing to equipment installment plans, which we think fundamentally are just a better balanced economic for us and for the industry.
One of the nuances of the EIPs, the equipment installment plans, was the 24 and 36 months. And you had initially said customers were very responsive to the 36 months. It saves them a little money every month. And the CRTC has kind of pushed back on that. They're reviewing it. But how are you thinking about EIPs, notwithstanding the competitive pressures from the subsidy model?
The appeal of it, if you focus on the premise of customer affordability, the subsidy model, and we've talked about this before, was really something that was invented when hardware costs were $200-$300. And as they've now escalated well beyond $1,000, and I'd say an average of about $1,500 per device, the subsidy model is sort of breaking down, and it makes it confusing for consumers and small businesses. And the affordability piece starts to fall apart. And so we thought 36 months was a good, clever solution aimed at customer affordability. While it was in market, the majority of customers were moving to that. So we're disappointed that the government put a halt on it until they review it. Nonetheless, we stay focused on that customer affordability metric we just introduced over the last 2 days. It now includes upfront taxes. So we'll amortize that over 24 months. Again, aimed at customer affordability and penetration of smartphones. And we think it's good for that. We don't think that removal of 36 months has had a big impact on volumes in the sense that the hardware subsidy is still a market of sort of compensated for that, we think. But we are hopeful that as the government looks at this, It really is a win-win for consumer and small businesses.
Do you think pushed into the overall wireless review, or are you expecting clarity on this prior to that?
We don't know. They've asked for comments for the month of October, and so we perhaps aspirationally read into that they're going to look at this a bit quicker than the full review. And as I said, it's something that is in to the benefit of customers. And so we're hopeful, but we really don't know.
Okay. And maybe just sticking on the regulatory side for a moment, and, you know, what are your thoughts on the wireless review and the analysis of MVNOs and what's going to shake out of the hearing next January?
I think it's, you know, important to always remind ourselves this was really part of a regular five-year review that was slated, and this five-year review includes a look at MVNOs. I think we take comfort in the fact that this government, for a very long time, has been very focused on facilities-based competition. And we think it's important. We think they will take a look at that investment cycle. You know, I think, you know, numbers are out there that over the last 10 years, the industry invested almost $70 billion in infrastructure. You know, collectively, we employ 120,000 across the country, and probably double that indirectly through various suppliers. So a big part of the economy, and it's been privately funded infrastructure investments. And I think that's healthy for the country, healthy for the industry, particularly as we embark on the eve of 5G investments. So we're optimistic that that all gets factored in. In terms of specifically on the MVNOs, we still sort of scratch our heads as to the problem it would solve. We think we have we see very healthy competition. We have four well-capitalized players in each of the markets and over 10 brands in each of the markets. And so we continue to see healthy competition if you were to look at pricing. You know, on a per gig basis, it's come down considerably over the last several years. We look to our neighbors in the U.S., and you know, they've moved to three facilities-based competitors with no mandated MVNO, and seems to be a healthy market there and healthier with industry consolidation. So not sure the problem they're trying to solve. You know, at the same time, the government's done a lot to subsidize the fourth player in the country, whether through set aside on spectrum, mandated roaming. And so to you know, contemplate MVNOs that are really going to impact those players the most sort of seems contradictory. And so we hope all of that you know, is factored into the mix. As I said, the importance of facility-based seems to be a mainstream, and we'll see how it plays out.
And maybe let's touch on 5G as a segue out of the regulatory, because obviously such going to be such profound changes to the industry. Your national competitors really highlight their fiber footprint. Going to be a limit 5G. You know, how is Rogers positioned for 5G?
We're extremely positive on where we sit network-wise. You know, I'll start with our investment into 4.5G on an all Ericsson network. Sort of ended up being well-timed, both in terms of selecting Ericsson a few years ago, before these issues sort of emerged, and we went with Ericsson for a number of reasons. But we invested in 4.5G equipment that's upgradable to 5G, and so the timing of the investment worked out well. We just went through the 600 spectrum auction, which is foundational spectrum for 5G, and we're extremely pleased, being the only national carrier to get 600 in every province and territory, including some additional spectrum in Southern Ontario. And so that foundational spectrum position, extremely pleased with. As we look to auctions coming up and spectrum that's needed for 5G, 3,500 next year, we already sit with 30 megahertz, and most technical folks would tell you need 50 megahertz to operate a 5G network. And so we're entering the auction from a position of solid strength. From a Spectrum perspective, we see that as a big positive. We continue to believe that having a national network is gonna be a competitive advantage as we go through 5G. Certainly, you know, there'll be, as you're starting to see in the U.S., a pickup of the consumer upside. You know, we think there is a place where consumers will pay a premium to move to 5G. I think most would agree that the upside is really gonna sit on the enterprise side. Our ability to have a national solution and target investments across the country for a particular enterprise solution is gonna be a competitive advantage. Keep in mind, it's not just towers, but as we move to edge computing, owning the real estate at the base of the tower is gonna become increasingly part of the solution for 5G. You know, having that complete ecosystem is important. You know, it's really, I often get asked about, you know, how we think about selling towers. It really does point to, you know, 5G owning towers is a big competitive advantage. We continue to focus on that. In terms of fiber footprint to support that, we've always had a healthy position and continue to make the investments needed, but that's working really well. Just working through it. I think one of the things to keep in mind is the technology around small cells continues to evolve. We were just, you know, when you look at the thought, you know, not too long ago was every small cell would have fiber fed to it. Well, the new technology is not necessarily so. You might have the first one that then repeats off the other small cells. It's more about power necessarily than fiber. Of course, microwave will continue to be a good solution, cost-effective solution. I think all that put together, very optimistic about our roadmap for 5G.
In terms of networks and spectrum, you generally go it alone. You do have a network sharing arrangement in the province of Quebec. How are you thinking about that as we move into 5G?
I think, not dissimilar from what you heard before, we think, and the comments I just made, owning a national network, we think is important, in a 5G world. I think the, you know, the complexity of tower ownership combined with, the spectrum, because it's more than just broad-based, distance spectrum. You're into shortwave 3500, 2800 the year after that, and then, you know, 3800 after that. Having a partner that brings in the right amount of spectrum is important, and I don't know that, we just don't see us having to rely on a partner's investments in spectrum and a partner's balance sheet, as the right approach to something like networks, which are so fundamental to this industry. We'll always look at potential network sharing arrangements, but we just don't see the economics making sense, particularly in a 5G world.
Should we infer from that you're willing to go it alone in Quebec then?
I think there are things between us and Videotron that are mutually beneficial and, you know, out of respect for our partner, I wouldn't say much more than that. I think they probably see it the same way. You know, as we look to our respective agreement, I think we'll move to something that ends up being a win-win for both of us.
All right. Let's move over to wireline now. You know, Ignite has been in the market for around a year, maybe a little more commercially. It was initially launched with a very hands-on sort of premium focus. How is that go-to-market strategy evolving now that you're, you know, you're down the road a year?
Extremely well, is the summary. You know, as you said, we launched it carefully. We wanted to toggle demand and deployment of it to make sure we got the product right, and we're now sort of at full scale. It's coming in nicely. The customer response has been terrific. You know, strategically, Still has a lot of upside for us. It's a product, for those of you not familiar with it, it's the Comcast X1 platform, but the IP-based version of it. And so it's a terrific transitional product from what we would describe as conventional TV linear streaming to something that integrates OTT solutions very readily. And so today we have, as you know, Netflix and YouTube. Very soon we'll have Amazon Prime, and the roadmap for product integration picks up from there. And so as other OTT players enter Canada, it'll be integrated into the product with the voice search metadata, et cetera. And so, the product response has been very good. If we were to look at all the metrics in terms of what it does for ARPU and ARPA for our cable business, we continue to see good upside on that. We expanded it, specifically to your question, you can now get the product with all tiers of internet speeds. And so it is moving into volume very quickly. We had talked about stop selling legacy, you know, towards the end of the year. I think we may even move that up, because of the success we've been having with it. And I've touched on the revenue side of it, but the cost piece of it is also coming in extremely well. We see churn down on the new product, which is what we hoped and are seeing that come in. On-demand purchases for video are up, and so that's a good sign. But importantly, CPE and install times have come way down relative to our legacy product and relative to this product when we first launched it a year ago.
Yeah.
So all those metrics are coming in nicely. But again, it's important to reiterate that this product was always about supporting the whole connected home strategy, which is really centered around internet.
Yeah.
And the internet is really the driver of the cable business, and so, overall, exceeding expectations.
The one of the metrics the Street will look to for progress on this on Ignite is capital intensity on the wireline side. What's the messaging there?
Capital intensity on wireline is coming in better than we expected. You saw in the first half of this year, we brought capital intensity down 29%, and you ought to expect capital intensity for the back half of the year to be about the same. We had communicated previously that by the time we exited 2021, so into 2022, our capital intensity would be in the 20%-22% range, and cable cash margins would be, you know, in excess of 25%. If you look at the first half of this year, our cable cash margins are at 19%, and capital intensity, as I said, down to 29%. And as we look to next year, we see, you know, further good declines. And so relative to that benchmark we had put out there, we're tracking ahead. And so the prospects for continued cable cash margin growth continues to track even slightly ahead of what we initially indicated.
Before we leave wireline, we should touch on the wholesale internet decision. You've articulated the impact already. What, you know, what messaging do you want to provide to investors with respect to that file and how the whole regulatory process is gonna play out?
Well, we're obviously disappointed in it. You know, as I go back to my comments on facilities-based, we've had a long track record of fully costed models. We're disappointed that on a number of fronts, that you know, the rates that were proposed are below costs. And we've been fairly transparent, and you can see it from our P&L, what costs are based on our margins. And so to introduce something at this level is disappointing and a change in direction, we think, from what we previously saw in their cost models and cost studies. The fact that it's retroactive is similarly disappointing and maybe even more so. You know, since the interim rates were announced back in 2016, we made investments of $4.4 billion in our wireless wireline network on that basis. And so for the CRTC to make a retroactive change, just from a policy standpoint, just can't be good for the industry, and frankly, can't be good for foreign investment in Canada. I think, you know, anything that gets back to predictability and transparency, I think is a better alternative. So The retroactive impact we've disclosed is, as you said, Tim, up to the date of the announcement, mid-August, the cumulative impact retroactive is $140 million. It's not significant on a go-forward basis. The wholesale piece of it overall is not a big part of it. Putting aside what I would call the rational economics of it, for the CRTC to issue the decision a week after the Competition Bureau, another branch of the government, talked to the internet market as being healthy, is kind of counterintuitive and inconsistent. We're all going through the process, and there are appeal provisions that we'll work through. Of course, depending on where it ends up, we'll look to our capital allocation model accordingly.
Okay. Any questions in the room for Tony? Okay. Maybe just touch on a few more smaller businesses, Tony. Maybe on the SME initiative, you don't disclose that. We don't see that directly anymore, but I know a lot of work's been going on there. What's happening with the small and medium enterprise side?
Good progress on that front. We've always talked about us being under-indexed in the wireline SME side of the business, and that's still the case today. The opportunity for growth continues to be large for us. The rate of increased penetration is coming in nicely. It's included as part of our cable results, so you don't get complete visibility to it. What I can tell you is we're focused on penetration on net, with continued fiber investments, where the payback is very good, and so the model continues to hunt well.
You are seeing growth on that side?
We continue to see growth.
Yeah.
Absolutely on that side of it. As I said, small businesses in particular are looking for alternatives, particularly alternatives that are IP-based, which is our focus in that space.
Okay. How about on media? It's granted a small business, but you've got some interesting assets there, and I know you've done a lot of work on that side as well. What's the outlook on media?
One of the things we focused on media was having that business with good, consistent growth, in the 2%-3% range with good, solid margin expansion. That was our focus, and when you look at the pieces that make that up, it's coming in nicely. Particularly now as we have sold off the publishing business. What you see in our media business is sports that continues to have very good top-line growth. The ebbs and flows of championships of the various teams sort of offset each other nicely, and so you get a good balance of sports viewership and sports revenue monetization coming in.
Weird to say that in Toronto, isn't it?
It is. That piece is working well. The other big part of it, of our media business, is the radio side of it, and that continues to have very good, solid growth and cash flow. Those are really the anchors for our media business and continue to, as I said, good, stable, solid growth.
Okay. Anything to call out on the asset monetization front? I think one of your buildings is up for sale. Is anything you're doing with the broader portfolio there?
I would say on the broader portfolio, nothing to report at the moment. The building for sale that you're talking about is a particular property in Toronto that's become somewhat high profile on Bloor Street there. I would say that's really reflective of our cost efficiency and space consolidation strategy. You'll continue to see, there's another one in Toronto last year that you saw us dispose of. As we continue to improve our space efficiency, excess assets we'll put on the market, and it's a terrific market to monetize.
Sure.
Those types of assets. You'll continue to see some of that happening. On the broader, what I would call balance sheet, nothing new at this stage.
Okay. Tony, just to wrap up, I'll leave the last word to you. What message do you want to leave with investors as we go into the back half of this year?
I'll kind of wrap up on the parts of the business that I touched on. In wireless, I think we're going through a terrific shift and against a healthy backdrop. We're making a good transition and improving the fundamentals of our wireless business. And then although the overage revenue will mask some of that in the very short term, we intend to be very transparent with our revenue trajectory based on overages and our underlying MRC. But a good, healthy business with solid margins. And then as we flip to cable, I think the upshot there is we've got a business with top line that continues to improve in growth rates and expanding margins and expanding cash flow margins. And on the media side, entering a phase of stable, meaningful cash flow growth. So just emphasizing that we are executing on the things we said we would and continue to be transparent on the moving pieces of it.
Super. I think we'll leave it there. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.